The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So this morning, I wanted to talk about some of the ways, you know, as we begin to explore our experience and look at what's going on in our minds, we see so many different ways that we struggle. And, you know, the teachings of the Buddha point to craving and clinging to so many different things being some of the root causes of why we suffer. And he elucidated a lot of different ways we crave and a lot of different ways we cling. And I just wanted to talk about one little piece of that today. I'd like to talk about I'd like to explore craving and clinging around views. Views, there's so many different ways that we have views. Views about who we are, our identities, views about what we're capable of. So there's a lot of personal views we have about ourselves and personal views we have about other people, our parents, our friends. Oh, that person is like this, and my relationship with them is like that, and they're always doing this. You know, these are all views that we have about people. So there are views that we have about ourselves, views that we have about others, that kind of are personal, you know, that we that are created perhaps because of our personal conditioning, you know, the way that we interacted with other kids on the playground, or how our first job went, or so many different ways that, you know, so many different conditions come to create the ways that we see ourselves, you know, the views that we hold about ourselves, the views that we hold about others. This is conditioned in our experience. And then there are a kind of maybe broader conditions that perhaps views or impressions we have about ourselves that come not just from our own personal conditioning, but more from the conditions of our culture. You know, how you know, the place in our culture that we were raised, those ideas and culture that we were most associated with. So, for instance, growing up in a middle class household, there may be certain views about culture that are, and in turn, how those mean that we are about ourselves. Or growing up in a perhaps a more affluent household, there may be views and opinions that are carried into our upbringing that influence what we think about ourselves and what we think about other people. I mean, we might have, you know, growing up in a perhaps a relatively greater economic status, we may have views and opinions that people who are in a lower economic status, you know, somehow deserve that, or somehow aren't working as hard as we are, or something like that. You know, so these are views that are created by the conditions more of culture, not just about our personal interactions, that they're broader. And so we are shaped by not only our own personal interactions, but much broader views and opinions that are held in the culture. And then there are, you know, the broader cultural views that impact, you know, what we think about, what our beliefs are about society. And again, these kind of relate to that level I was just talking about. So, for instance, you know, we might have the American culture, for instance, there's often a belief that America is the land of opportunity. You know, anyone who works hard enough can achieve their dreams, and that belief about the culture then will have impacts on, you know, what we think about ourselves and other individuals. You know, and also creating blindnesses. You know, that if, for instance, we think, you know, oh, you know, America's the land of opportunity and anyone who works hard enough can achieve their dreams, then those who aren't achieving their dreams aren't working hard enough. Not seeing, not because of that view, because that filter, that view is how we're looking at the world, not perhaps seeing those raised in perhaps a higher economic class or status, or with a particular, with the perhaps a white skin, where certain opportunities are afforded to them, not seeing that those same opportunities are not available across the board, and that someone with a darker skin might not have doors open to them that lead to greater opportunities. And so, you know, we are conditioned by the broader factors of our culture. Those in turn we take in, form beliefs, and then in turn that influences, so it influences us, and then it in turn influences the culture. And so there's so many different ways that views, that beliefs come into our system. All these different conditionings of the ways views come into our organism. And this is very natural. You know, we are a species of community. We do not, an individual human being would not survive absent community. A person, a child, I mean, we're different than some animals. Many animals do have a raising, you know, process, but some animals, you know, as soon as they are born, it's like they're on their own, and they have the, you know, the instincts and the, you know, the genetic condition, the genetic wiring that leads them to be able to survive on their own. Well, for as human beings, we don't have that. We have to have cultural input, other human input, to learn how to survive. And so we need the conditioning. We need to learn how to feed ourselves and clothe ourselves, and, you know, how to navigate the world. And so this mechanism of culture influencing us and us influencing culture is not a mistake. It's part of how we are as human beings. And yet what happens is that, you know, different cultures create different perspectives, different views, and we begin to attach to those views. You know, we've grown up with a particular perspective. Perhaps it's worked for us, perhaps it hasn't worked for us, but perhaps it's worked for us, and in that, whatever perspective we've grown up in, that's all that we've, you know, taken in of how the world works. And we begin to attach to that. Not that this is how the world works in this system or in this culture or with these people, but this is the world. So we take that in as being true, as opposed to this is a view or this is a belief. And so while views are very human, the place that the Buddha points to in terms of how suffering happens around views is that we cling to them. We believe them to be truth. We don't understand, oh, this is a perspective, this is a view. And so this is the point, this is the place in our practice that we begin to explore around views. Can we begin to recognize what views are operating in our experience? We are all operating with many views. Many, many views. And many of those views are below the level of our conscious awareness. We are simply, you know, kind of almost at the mercy of those views, behaving out of those views. But the good news is that the mindfulness practice can begin to reveal to us the deeper layers of what is typically thought of as our subconscious. We can begin to see what the views are that are motivating our actions. And so I think I've touched in, you know, so there is kind of this normal or human side that views are actually kind of necessary in a way in order for us to survive, in order for us to live. But it's not necessary for us to attached to those views and believe they are the only way. This alone is true. Everything else is wrong. That's the way it's classically stated in the suttas when people come together and are having conflicts about views. In fact, the Buddha often explores the difference in views as being one of the main sources of conflicts in various communities. And that statement, you know, this is the way it is. This is what's true. This alone is true. Everything else is wrong. And they there's all these different times where various religious sects would come together, and they would each state their view, and they're directly contradicting each other. And they're all saying this is what's true. And so, of course, what happens? They end up fighting. You know, they're not able to have a dialogue about their views because they're holding them so rigidly. So the danger of views is that we do adhere to them, and that we don't recognize them, that we don't see them happening. Views will limit ourselves. You know, if coming back to those personal views, those views of who we are, what we're capable of, you know, when we believe ourselves to be only capable of certain things, you know, if you had told me when I was 20 that I would spend my life being a public speaker, I would not have, you know, thought that would be possible. You know, so that idea, oh, I can't be a public speaker, that would be limiting, right? Well, fortunately, the Dharma does its work, does its magic, helps us to see, you know, where we are boxing ourselves and limiting ourselves. You know, we see this often when we are limited by other people, when other people might, you know, we see this when other people say, oh, this is how you are. It's like, well, I see, I'm like that sometimes, but no, that's not who I am. And so we see it when other people put those views on us, and we get a little charged up about that. But we don't see it as much when we're doing it to ourselves. We take it to be, this is who I am. I'm not capable of public speaking. I hate myself. I'm a failure. Whatever we believe about ourselves. We box other people in. We limit other people in that same mechanism. Again, you know, so these are ways that views kind of limit us personally, culturally. One sutta says, Those attached to perception and views roam the world offending people. And this is, you know, this is... all we have to do is watch the political debates to see this. You know, so what does it mean to open to the possibility, you know, can we begin to recognize that we maybe are not limited by our views, that we're not necessarily just who we think we are? Another kind of famous quote from the suttas: in whatever way one conceives, the fact is ever other than that. You know, this points to the way, you know, that when we believe something, when we conceive something, we take it to be a truth. You know, the very kind of reification of that, or identification, or seeing things through that lens, is already limiting us. I don't take this to mean that whatever we conceive is wrong, but that whatever we conceive, there is more to it than our conception. The fact is ever other than that. And if we are believing our conceptions to be reality, there's an inherent delusion in that. And so I'd like to explore a little bit the connection between views and struggle, stress, suffering. Because anytime we are suffering, some kind of attachment to a view is already happening. We may not know it, we may not see it directly, but it's a pointer in a way. When we are suffering, there is some kind of underlying view or belief that's happening. A very common view that's happening, that happens around suffering is, it's not supposed to be like this. You know, the very basic kind of view around what's going on in our world. It's not supposed to be like this. And if we don't see that as a view, if we don't see what's going on, if we're seeing it from that perspective, there's going to be conflict around that view. You know, underneath that view, you know, so underneath that view of it's not supposed to be like this can be other layers of belief and other layers of views about perhaps ourselves. I mean, for myself, you know, it's not supposed to be like this. I usually took it on. It's like this because I'm a failure. It's like this because I'm not lovable. It's like this because I didn't try hard enough. It's like this because I'm not as good as other people. So underlying that, it's not supposed to be like this, were other layers of beliefs around identity, self-identity. When we attach to those, or we don't see that we are attached to them, because often, I mean, very interesting, something like self-hatred, you know, it seems like such an obvious thing, perhaps, you know. And yet, you know, I think in many ways, a pattern of self-hatred ruled my life, but was not consciously seen until I started meditating and looking at my mind and seeing that I told myself over and over again what a failure I was and how bad a person I was, that I was no good. I had compensated for that on the other side by telling myself, I'm successful, I can do these things, I'm you know, the best mathematician in the room, or, you know, whatever. I was a math student. So I would compensate for that, telling myself that story consciously, but it was kind of overlaid on this underlying belief, I'm a failure, I can't do things, I'm no good, I need to try harder. And it wasn't until I started meditating and actually turning and sitting there in silence and seeing what the mind produced that I began seeing those thoughts. And how amazing it was to me to see, wow, my life has really been driven by those beliefs, unaware. Unaware. We can, in seeing some of these, I'm going to go through two sides of this. You know, we have sometimes beliefs, as I just said, you know, we have beliefs of how self-negative beliefs. We also have self-positive beliefs. And I think what we often believe is that we are supposed to always only have a self-positive belief, and that the self-negative belief is what's the problem. Well, the self-positive belief also has its flaws, which I'll get to in a moment. So we begin to explore the patterns of beliefs. We begin to see that the beliefs are operating. We see how they contribute to suffering. It was very clear to me how the thought, I'm a failure, led to a feeling of unworthiness, led to a feeling of smallness, led to a feeling of collapse, led to suffering. It became very clear that there was a conditioned relationship between that belief and a subsequent kind of state of suffering. A different relationship to the experience. I mean, you know, so it's not supposed to be like this. You know, if it's like this, it means I'm a failure. Well, a different relationship to that whole experience might be, okay, it is like this. It's like this right now, and things change. Understanding that past actions have contributed to what's arising right now. Other conditions in the world have contributed to what's arising right now. Understanding how our present moment attitudes influence how we are right now. I could see there were times when, you know, something would happen and it's like, wow, you know, things are falling apart right now. But with a given kind of state of mind or a sense of agency maybe, I could be okay when things were a certain way. Whereas in another time, if it felt like I didn't have agency, whew, there would be such collapse with those situations. So we can also attach to the views that others have and suffer around that. We might, I mean, I've been through this sometimes, you know, we might have the feeling that if somebody else has a belief or view about me or about a situation, that the only way that I can be happy is to convince them to have a different belief. We suffer about this a lot, I think. And, you know, I've seen this, you know, that one time before I, you know, early in my meditation practice, before, while I was a computer programmer, and I wanted to take a lot of time off. I was a contractor, so I had some freedom in my timing of my schedule, but I wanted to go off and do a 3-month course every year, and at some point, I realized that the view of the people I was contracting for and my view about the importance of my going off to a 3-month retreat didn't kind of coincide. And you know, I was kind of churning in my mind, trying to figure out how can I convince them to believe that it's a good thing. And there was so much suffering around that. And at some point I realized, oh, I don't have to make them believe what I believe. But I can act from this place of this is what I know is best for me. And, you know, am I willing to take the consequences of these two beliefs not coming into alignment? And in this case, you know, it was that I had to kind of go in my mind and say, you know, oh, okay, so if they don't think it's in their best interest for me to go off, am I willing to quit? Am I willing to leave this work? And I found that I was, that my value of the retreats was strong enough that I was ready to say goodbye to that. And then when I finally got up the courage to tell them, I'm going to do this retreat, I didn't make it an option for them. I didn't say, oh, will it work for you? I said, I'm going to be doing this. And they said, let's see how we can make that work on our side. It's like... I mean, it was stunning. I mean, all of that suffering about, you know, their view not being in line with that was like, they were willing to work with it, you know. So it was interesting when I finally came into alignment with what my place was. I didn't have to fight with their views too much. So many times there can be a freedom in the simple recognition that we don't have to share the same belief that others share. We don't have to convince them to believe the way we believe in order to have ease, to have peace. There are other times when we can see that the beliefs that others have lead to harm, lead to suffering in the world. Racism is a classic, a really key example of this, the beliefs around the different, you know, the belief that there's a difference in race, the belief in different capacities, the belief in, you know, whatever people think about it. It's kind of amazing to me that there's still this happening in our culture. So not attaching, you know, in racism, the two sides of that, you know, on the side of, or multiple sides, I'm just really beginning my exploration of looking at this as a perspective in my own life and seeing how influenced I've been by the conditions of a culture that believes that race is a reality. That race, the belief that it's a reality makes it a reality. And seeing how, you know, navigating the world, there are just very subtle underlying, you know, senses of, oh, need to be careful here, or, you know, seeing a person of a different color, it's like, oh, is that person okay? Can I be safe with that person? You know, it's like, wow, that's in there. That's in there. And so beginning to see how conditioned I've been by those beliefs and not, you know, but the seeing of it is at least the first step. You know, the seeing of it is the first step. And then, you know, seeing that the culture, you know, so much of the dominant culture puts this out there onto people of color. You know, it's like so much suffering in this world happens not because we are taking on beliefs about ourselves, but because other people are putting those beliefs onto them, onto us. That there's that dynamic. And so not attaching to the beliefs that others have doesn't mean that we simply ignore them. You know, that like the example I gave around the work situation, I had the freedom to say, I'm not going to take up that view. You know, there's a kind of a difference there. You know, that I had the resources to be able to say, yeah, I'll quit that job. You know, I had the confidence that I could get another job. That might not be the case for all people in different economic statuses, different races. So I had that, you know, I had that, you know, underlying structure of the society that was supporting me to make that decision. It wasn't just me being able to do that. So sometimes in our culture, there's so much overlaid on other people, on us, on others, that we, you know, we can't simply say, okay, I just won't buy into your belief. You know, it's like, it just keeps coming back. It just keeps coming back. It keeps coming back. And so there are times, I think, around non-attachment to views that others hold, that when we see that there's harm being created, and so much harm is created from these views of race, that we understand, okay, these are views that are operating, and we see the harm, and because our practice is really around non-harming, we may try, hopefully not with hatred in our hearts, hopefully with some compassion for the suffering that's being caused, that we try to act in ways that will begin to restructure the beliefs in our culture. You know, we are not, what's the right word? We're not frozen into cultural beliefs just because they're there. Cultures have changed and they can change. As I said, you know, we're shaped by our culture, but then in turn, we can shape our culture. And so, around some of these deeper views that create harm in our society, we can begin to shift in our own hearts and act in compassionate ways to point to these views, to point to the suffering and the non-truth, really, non-truth. I mean, that from what I understand, you know, humans are humans. There is no difference. It's a skin pigment. That's it. There's nothing ultimately different about us as human beings. And so race is a concept. It's a human construction taken to be reality. And then that reality creates that taken to be reality, that belief in that concept as reality creates so much suffering. This is the way the human mind works. And so in relationship to views, again, beginning to recognize, you know, the views that are operating underneath. To begin to make them conscious. To begin to make them conscious. And to take action when we see views are causing harm. Views from ourselves or views from others that are causing harm. So equally leading to suffering, I think, though less obviously leading to suffering, are views that this is the way it's supposed to be. And again, underlying that can be perspectives or self-beliefs. You know, when it's like this, it means I'm a success, I'm lovable. The suffering is hidden here in some ways because things are impermanent, unreliable, subject to change, out of our ultimate control. And so when this is the way it's supposed to be is happening and impermanence takes its natural course and the out-of-control nature of experience takes its natural course, things change and become the way they're not supposed to be. We suffer partly because we've been attaching to, oh, it was like this. It was right for a while. It was the way it was supposed to be, and now it's not. What have I done wrong? How have I failed? And so I see, you know, this kind of, that will lead us back into the, oh, it was the way it was supposed to be. What did I do wrong? How did I mess up? I must have done something really stupid, or somebody else did something really stupid and I can blame them. We sometimes do that. So again, you know, so we end up back in that perspective. It's not supposed to be like this. Well, you will find in your life that it will go through times when it's the way we like it and times when it's the way we don't like it. That's just the natural course of a human life. And what we do, I think, is we really, well, we identify around both sides, as I've seen in my own mind. We identify around the side that's like, yes, I'm good at this. I know how to do this. And we identify around the side like, I'm a failure. I can't do this. I'm no good. And what I'd like to suggest is if there's some time where you have an identity around, yeah, this is who I am, and I feel really good about that, that there may be a contrasting identity of, ooh, and this is who I am, and I don't feel good about that. And that they're intimately connected, those identities. and we, you know, those views about ourselves. And what we think our job is as people is to somehow get rid of the identity where I don't feel good about myself and shore up and hold on to that identity. Yes, this is who I am. I always feel good about myself. And what I'd like to propose is that this is who, that sense of, yes, I am, this is who I am. I am this really strong and good and powerful person. The I am-ness of that is a setup, because it's never going to always be like that. And what happens is that there are times when we find ourselves in the situation where, ugh, it's not going the way I want it to. And because we have this view of ourselves as being, you know, this way over here, again, when it's shown that we're not always able to do that, whew, we crash into the other identity. What I learned from myself is that I need to be aware of both sides. And we're not going to be able to flip a switch and turn it off. We're not going to be able to flip a switch and say, oh, don't have those beliefs. But we can begin to recognize and open, oh, I'm believing this about me. I'm believing that I'm a strong, powerful person right now. Well, what's happening actually in that situation? There's some agency. There's some sense of being able to navigate the world with a sense of safety and love, perhaps. You know, so there's that openness of heart, maybe, in that situation. And it doesn't negate that that's happening, to recognize. So the fact of capacity, the fact of the strength of mind that we have, the fact of the openness of heart that we have, not identifying with that doesn't make it any less potent. In fact, it strengthens its potency in a way, because the collapsing of this is who I am actually, you know, it creates a container of smallness around that strength. And the opening of that identity to a more fluid container creates a flexibility of heart that is more free. And also what I've seen as I begin to, it's scary to recognize, oh yeah, that identity, I'm a success, I'm potent, I'm strong, to recognize that that identity too is one of clinging. It's scary to recognize that, because we think it means that we'll only end up in the negative side. But what I've seen is that as I begin to acknowledge that, it doesn't take away those times, those places, those ways in which the mind feels strong and open and able to navigate the world with skill. It doesn't take those away. But the identification, the letting go of the identification of that, it's the identification of that that will send us into the other side. And so as I began to explore, I mean, I when I first started exploring the self-hatred identity and this I'm a really good person identity, exploring those two identities, it was pretty easy in a way to recognize the identity around self-hatred as being suffering. It was much harder to recognize the I'm a good person identity as being suffering. But when I saw how they were linked and intimately related, I began to see I need to recognize that identity too. The I'm a good person identity. I need to recognize that as a clinging. And when I began to do that, it really opened the doorway for a more even balance and relationship to the world, where actually I could begin to navigate with much more skill. It's like the strength grew to encompass those harder times as well. And the strength to not be so puffed up around the times when things were going well. So this is a really helpful exploration. You know, when we are suffering, what beliefs are operating? When we feel like it's going really well, what beliefs are operating? Well, there's so much more to say. I mean, I guess I've only got 2 minutes left. I do want to say one piece just to put it out there because, you know, we can't, as I said in the beginning, we really can't navigate life without views, and we can't navigate spiritual practice without views either. So what are the views that help us to watch our minds? You know, one of those views, and this was said in one text. The sutta is called Views, and it was a layperson was having a conversation with people of many different religious sects, and they were all arguing, as I said earlier, arguing about their various views. This is the way it is. Everything else is wrong. And this is the way it is. Everything else is wrong. So all these different views, and they were all arguing, and then they said, oh, there's one of those followers of the Buddha. Let's have a conversation with him about his views and the Buddha's views. And so they had opened up a conversation. Well, what are the Buddha's views? And he says, well, I can't speak to the Buddha's views. I'm sorry. Well, what are the views of the monks? Well, I can't speak to those either. You know, this is a lay person. And they said, well, what are your views? And he said, well, I can speak to you of that. And so he heard all of their views. And what he said as each one responded to that, he said, you know, those views that you're holding tightly to those views, and it's creating suffering for you. When you're holding that tightly to those views, look how you're arguing, you know, look at the conflict that's being created. And they said, okay, so what's your view? And he said, my view is that views are dependently arisen, they are conditioned, and that adhering to views creates suffering. And they said, well, you're just adhering to that view too. And he said, well, when I see a view that is being adhered to, I see in that moment this is constructed, it's dependently arisen, and right there's freedom. And it said that all those other monks kind of drooped. Oh. So this is one of those views that we can live with, hold in our hearts. Views are constructed. They're not only constructed in our own mind, they're constructed in our culture and fed into our minds. Can we begin to see them? Can we begin to see them as constructed? Can we begin to see how we adhere to them as creating suffering? So this is a view, in a way, this is a view that helps lead to the end of clinging to views. There are other perspectives that we can also take, other views that we can hold on our path around suffering, a view that suffering isn't random. Suffering is brought on through ignorance and craving, and that there is a capacity in the mind to release ignorance and craving and free ourselves from suffering. That by watching the processes in our mind, that can begin to happen. So different views that we can hold that will get us on the path and have us interested in watching our minds. And then I have to stop. So thank you for your attention.